Welcome to the Market Genius AI podcast. This is our RevTech edition of the show, where we showcase go-to-market tools and discuss trends, strategies, and development with leaders of those tools.
In this episode, our guest is Tim Amarain, the CEO of RevCast. I'm glad to have you on.
Excited to be here.
Yeah, super excited to have you and excited to learn more about RevCast. So let's just dive right in and get the elevator pitch for what RevCast is and what it does.
Yeah, absolutely. RevCast is an AI solution that helps revenue leaders create plans to continually measure those plans and to optimize them in real time. So we are really focused on bringing agility to the go-to-market organization.
I'm excited to see what that means. And you use that very special word of AI. So I'm excited to see what that looks like. And how did the company get started? What was the story behind the founding?
So me and my two other co-founders worked together at one of our last companies. And we were all three of us involved in the go-to-market operation. And one of my co-founders was longtime RevOps leader. Me and my other co-founder were really focused on go-to-market, led sales teams, post-sales teams, partner sales teams, like everything in the revenue org. And we just saw a massive pain point when it came to how do we actually plan for a year and plan for a year in a way that brings every stakeholder on board, right? It's one thing to plan within your team, within your function, within your org. Great. How do I bring marketing on board? How do I bring finance on board? How do I bring my CEO on board in a way that's not in some Excel spreadsheet, frankly, because that's no way to collaborate. That's no way to align. That's a way to run numbers. It has its function. It has its use, but it's not a way to align. And we just felt this pain in a fast-growing company. One of my co-founders was a co-founder of this other company, but we were on a ride from Series A to Series E. And so a lot of growth, a lot of planning, a lot of replanning, a lot of changing on the fly. And we just saw a big opportunity there.
Yes, it is. It's always like the fun time of year when it's like, let's plan for next year. And it's like, you're in offsites and you have scattered documents. And is everyone actually on the same plan and moving to the same direction? It's always challenging. How long has RevCast been around and where are you at in terms of your own financing journey?
Yeah, I mean, we're pre-seed. So we've been around since 2023, really started going to market midway through 2024, targeting sales leaders and really trying to help them with all of the, especially growth stage sales leaders, growth stage venture-backed sales leaders, helping them better communicate outside of the revenue organization. So we're still early. We're definitely still, in that mode of test, adjust, optimize what we're doing, but an exciting part of our company's history.
Yeah. How many people are you now?
Small. We're lean. So we run a lean team, 6 people. We like to be lean. Most of our team is on the product side. I'm a big believer product wins. That's where I come from. And we aggressively invest in that part of the business.
I'm excited to see the product itself. Do we want to hop into the demo?
Sure.
Let's do this.
There's really 3 core things that we focus on at RevCast. And I mentioned it earlier. It's how do we create best practice plans, right? How do we understand where we're going in terms of where we want to bring the business? How do we then say, okay, that's great, but plans are plans. And the second that a year starts, right, 2 weeks into the year, a month into the year, the path to the target changes. So how do we measure? How do we know early on where we're deviating from a plan? And when we're deviating from a plan, is it a risk? Is it an opportunity? How do I quantify that? What do I do? How do I think about this? And so for us, we're really focused on helping leaders understand one of the top line company targets. So, my CFO, my board CEO, they're handing me some top line bookings target. But how do I build that bottoms-up plan to get to that target? And what are reasonable assumptions that we're making in the business, right? Like, what are reasonable assumptions that we're making around quota attainment? What are reasonable assumptions that we're making around attrition? And how do we think about hiring throughout the year? And we do this, like, as you can see here, when we're working with revenue leaders, we model that full go-to-market organization. So we model the quota carriers. We model like the pipeline generators. We model the channel sales that you might need in an organization. So we capture everything that's going on. And frankly, what, you know, our users love is that not only do we model this, but we give you real-time feedback. So if I say, hey, maybe I think there's going to be a little bit higher attrition than I planned for, I come in and I model for that. Like, what does that do to my top line? And we can see that instant feedback on how that changes top line results and expectations. So the first, like the core thing that our customers adopt us for is this ability to really quickly, like, model different scenarios, lay out the case for the year, communicate it in a very clear way, how this is going to play out through the year, and drive alignment outside of revenue. It's one thing to drive alignment inside of revenue, but really you have to get your CFO on board. You have to get your marketing leader on board. You have to get your CEO on board. And this is where most of our users start with us. Now, you know, this frankly pulls back into a number of different components of our platform. We model quotas. We have ramps. Of course, we have teams. We have employees. But the key thing is, okay, we've got this plan. We've locked it in. The board's approved. We're aligned. We're going to go execute on this plan. But the question becomes, like, how are we actually performing against that plan at any point in time? And we're hooking into your CRM and we're saying, okay, like, wonderful, but let's pull this data out. Let's show you how you're performing in real time against the plan, where you have gaps, where you have deviations from what you expected. And then let's give you this data and show you, like, hey, not just now, but what did it look like in the past? And how are we projecting this to look in the future when it comes to the key things that really drive business outcomes? And so we're pulling this out. We're helping our users see what's happening in the business, understand not just what's happening, but what's coming, you know, in the future and what to expect. And increasingly, what our users are really getting into with RevCast is our AI, is our revenue teammate, our revenue assistant. And this is where, you know, we're investing a lot of our time from a product standpoint. And one, putting answers at the fingertips of revenue leaders. Two, helping them analyze, you know, truly what that means. And three, trying to guide them into different actions or different areas to explore in their business where they can improve revenue outcomes, frankly, for the company. So, you know, I think one of the things that we're doing is, hey, the simple ask and answer. Like, if I say, I want to know more about my enterprise segment, how is my sales attainment? And be able to converse in a way that I'm, you know, as a sales leader, I'm thinking about this in my head this way. So can you give me, like, really quick answers for this, right? Can you put the data at my fingertips? I can say, hey, create a graph that shows me this. And hopefully get a more or less instant response. And then, of course, like, be able to interrogate the system further, not just to say, like, what is the data? But if I want to hit my sales targets, where should I focus? And try to be increasingly this sort of co-pilot for a revenue leader and help them. There's so many things going on for a revenue leader, right? There's so many things that they're dealing with at any point in time, especially in high growth companies. So how do we help them focus? How do we give them information they need? And how do we help them, you know, find that starting point for improving the business, for further interrogating the business, and, you know, for going from there?
This is very cool. It's like a good mix of, I think about it, obviously for planning and what we're doing in terms of from a marketing perspective, from an outbound sales perspective, and so forth. It also is a great tool to be able to use for forecast meetings. So instead of having a team put together endless amounts of slide decks or whatever it may be for checking on how forecast is going and what do things look like, you use this tool. And maybe you don't even need to have a meeting anymore. Maybe it's like any executive can go in and get an idea of how things are going, which is such a time savings for a business.
Yeah. I mean, let's talk about the like the cadences of a revenue org, right? Like there are like really key things that most go-to-market orgs orient their operations around. There's the weekly forecast meeting, and there's multiple of those, a like team level, segment level, and then eventually exec level. Then there are QBRs. Then there's usually like a half year, semi-annual checkpoint. And then there's annual planning. I would argue that what tends to happen in most businesses is that you spend 2 to 3 months coalescing around an annual plan and spending a lot of energy, a lot of time, a lot of money, figuring out where we want to be, how we're going to get there. You get that annual plan in place, the board certifies it, you're good to go. Then your predominant focus is on the weekly forecast meeting. So your predominant focus is on deals in the quarter, always. What happens is at the QBR checkpoint, you start looking back beyond deals and quarter and you start saying, wait, some of those key assumptions that we had in our plan, are they holding? And if they're not holding, what's happening and what does that mean? Frankly, if you're only doing that now in a world that's dominated by AI, if you're only doing that every 3 months, you're behind and your competition is going to lap you. Like, so you have to have this always on view of not just deals in the quarter, but every assumption that you've got baked into your go-to-market motion.
There's obviously multiple ways to do this exercise, right? A lot of that is driven by the habits, but a lot of that is also driven by the specifics of the product that the company is selling that is trying to do the planning around that, right? So you always is a little bit different go-to-market and specifics. How do you capture that in your tool? Do you have ability to predefine the type of assumptions that I want to take into consideration? Or I have to always go through this notion of, okay, you need to have a quota, you need to have a number of reps, and then you need to set up the ratios between the headcounts, right? And so on, so on. So it's more like a capacity plan. And then eventually you compare this to the financial target, or you're starting with the product and you're trying to make assumptions around that, because there's upcoming major change on that front, and that can swing substantially how you're going to sell this, right? I've seen all these scenarios. So as I'm trying to see where there's a boilerplate for all these assumptions that you can set up and then run with it, because that is something that I think it's solving a lot of these initial conversations.
Yeah, and I think what you're pointing at and what we see in our sales cycles is, while we purposely built something from the outset for revenue, finance leaders have a lot of interest in what we're doing. Now, finance leaders tend to have this view, I think that you were articulating there, of kind of the widgets view. How many widgets, mm-hmm. over how much time, at what price, and I get to a plan, right? Whereas revenue leaders think about, how many people do I need to sell, how many widgets, and like at what consistent performance level can I expect that to happen? Today, we're primarily focused on the revenue side. But what I will say is that we're increasingly pushing upstream from the sales pipeline itself, right? So while we're looking at the sales pipeline and aligning capacity to that pipeline, sales capacity, mm-hmm. what we've started introducing into our platform is, well, tell us more about how you expect that pipeline to convert over time. And tell us more about how you expect that stage-to-stage conversion to occur in the pipeline. And that really, what we've seen with that is that finance leaders are coming in and saying, oh, okay, like this is a more full-fledged model that I can look at and really plan the business around and measure assumptions versus reality and understand very early where we maybe have issues or where maybe we need to accelerate because we're doing well. So I think we're trying to strike a balance. I mean, we're primarily built for revenue leaders, but we see just more and more of that finance leader coming in, pushing us further upstream.
Yeah, so that's another dimension of clash assumptions, right? So I've seen this as well. I'm pretty sure you've been in this conversation many times. A CFO has a plan. Here's a revenue target. You know, this ties out beautifully. I have ice hockey stick for the next 5 years,
right? Go
with my P&L. I'm making profits. You know, rule of 40 looks beautiful. I love it. I sold this to the board, by the way, already, so that you don't have a lot of room to tell me you don't like it. And then there's like an email, here you go, CRO, head of sales and marketing. I want you to deliver.
I get fired up about this. Let me tell you how.
I knew I'm going to push the button.
I talk to revenue leaders sometimes that say, I don't own the plan. And I tell them, you're about to get fired. You better figure out a way to own a plan. And sure, your CFO and your board are dictating some top line growth goals. No doubt. I get that. We've all lived through that dynamic, and that is what it is. But if you don't have a way of clearly explaining from the bottoms up how you get to what they're asking for and what you need from the business, what you need from an investment standpoint, the assumptions that you're making, what you need from marketing, what you need from product, you're not going to be there long. So while you may be given a plan, you better have your own plan. And if not, you better dust up your resume because you won't be there long. I mean, that's just the bottom line. No doubt about that. I've seen it happen over and over. There's nothing that gets me fired up more than a revenue leader telling me I don't own the plan.
Yeah, that's another thing that I think is missing in the education process. I also see this notion in the conversations with the revenue operations leaders. They are often brought on board just to justify what the sales leader wants to do instead of really keep them in check, right? And it's not about I'm superior to you versus someone else, right? That's not that game. It's not an ego game. It's really about setting the right level of expectations and be realistic about what is going to happen. Because to your point, if that there's a big gap, you have to be very, very creative to prolong your stay in this company. And you will need to have some good data or good assumptions, validated assumptions, so that you can bet on that. There's always a risk, right? You do something, you don't do something, there is a risk, right? That's how it works. But if you have an input, I think you can be pretty creative and have a higher confidence that that's going to work that way.
Yeah.
I think that's what you're solving for as well.
100%. Look, I mean, my former CEO, I think he said this best. Every quarter, you're going to be doing things that you never did before. So you have to get comfortable with that. That doesn't mean, though, that you don't plan and that you don't clearly articulate what that truly means for the business. And, you know, as a sales leader, a big part of your job is making sure you have the requisite investment from the other parts of the business to hit your goal. It's not just about how many salespeople can I hire, right? It's about like, okay, so what does our customer success function look like to grow our customer base? What does our marketing function look like for new logo versus customer expansion? What do our product plans look like to continually give me more opportunity to up and cross sell? And to really argue for that, you've got to have data. You can't just go complain about these things, right? You have to show the plan. This is how we're getting there. And these are the assumptions I'm making. And that's where we work with revenue leaders most often.
There's this I would call it triangle of alignment, right? You have a finance, you have a sales, and you have a people that will help to execute, which is operations. And I think that is always a broken communication. I think there's always a tension between these teams because they see what the others don't want to see or they don't want to talk about. So I think having something in place where you can bring all of them together and you can align around these assumptions, I think it's gold because it's saving a lot of energy, right? If I don't agree with the plan, to your point, I can just put my papers on the table and say goodbye, thank you. This is unrealistic. I can't do it just right away, right? Of course, a lot of people will just drag on until they find another job, but I still think it's just a fair game, right? At this point, right? It's just really, you know what you're signing up for, right?
Yeah, and it holds other teams accountable too. I think, you know, part of that plan is we're going to release a new product at this day, and therefore we can take on this amount of quota, and that product doesn't get delivered. Well, the head of sales can go back and say, well, that was baked into this assumption. Now we need to probably revisit quotas to be fair to the sales team and what we're trying to accomplish here. Like, there's just ways of, or if marketing doesn't deliver on inbound leads or what, or the events that they were supposed to, it creates a healthy tension to hold everyone accountable.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. 100%. And that tension is important, right? Like that healthy tension is important. And I would go back to accountability because it's too easy. And it's not always sales that gets blamed. Like, let's be honest. I'm sensitive to that because I've, you know, been on the revenue side for a while. But like all of these different functions get blamed at different points in time. But the reality is, if we democratize access to what the plan is, what the core assumptions are, and day over day, like week over week, what the progress is towards that plan, then we're going to align better. We're going to find problems here, and we're going to rally as a team to solve them more quickly. And I think the worst thing, if you think about cohesion as a company, as a team, as an executive team, the thing that destroys it the most is inequality in terms of access to data. I'll be honest, like if we're not looking at the same things, or if we're making assumptions that are, that, you know, just flawed because we're not informed, then that's going to cause unhealthy tension.
Yes.
And that's what kind of kills executive teams.
And I think there's even a conversations to be had, like, what are we not going to do? Okay, so we're going to, we need to reduce the marketing budget X amount. Okay, what does that mean to the plan? You put that in there, and I'm sure they, as the AI gets better and better at learning your data, it can then take a look at that and give executives the results of that so that it's not 3 months later. I think this happens sometimes. They reduce the budget and then they're like, hey, marketing team, why have inbounds dropped? And you're like, well, I told you that that was going to happen. This is a place where it can be very clearly displayed. Yeah.
Yes.
I have to take a break right now.
I'll stop airing my dirty laundry.
This just brings me those bad memories.
I'm curious to learn, like, what is the kind of critical metric that you're asking your customers to look at when they're evaluating how the tool's impacting their business? Obviously, there's a time savings element. There's transparency, but what are you really having them focus on?
I mean, one is efficiency. Can we take an ops team and magnify or amplify their impact, right? And it's not about going in and reducing heads. It's about like, hey, you've got a team of two or three. How long can we keep that team at two or three and they have an outsized impact because we're giving, you know, them access to this and helping them be more productive. The other, frankly, though, and you know, I'll talk about some customer stories here, just impact to revenue outcome. So we had a customer that plugged in RevCast, very sort of focused on hiring for the back half of their year. They were very cautious. They're like, should we hire? How should we approach this? They plugged in RevCast and they found out that for one of their segments of their business, their ramp periods were too generous and they were actually overpaying reps because they hit accelerators during. And this is not a problem you normally have ramp. Every time you're talking about ramp, you're like, oh, how the hell do I make people ramp faster, get people to ramp faster? But in this case, they were overpaying because everyone was ramping and hitting accelerators. And like, well, we need to change the time and the shape of this ramp. And they did that. And by their own estimation, it saved them 200K hires in the back half of the year and allowed them to hire in a new region faster, right? So a lot of this is finding out.
Great example.
Where am I inefficient in my business with my go-to-market structure? And these are things that you just frankly don't take the time to measure for your business because it's hard, but you should be. You should be measuring this all the time.
I think most of the ramp metric or assumptions is based on an ability to create effective sales enablement process than product complexity. And it should be the other way around. The ramp should be defined by the product complexity and how difficult it is, not by the fact that you have a really shitty product enablement process or sales enablement, right? Like this is not really working, right? It's a probably most common misunderstanding in the enablement in the startups. I've seen this across the board. We don't understand that.
If your enablement changes and ramp periods are slowing down or speeding up, okay, now you can see the impact of that. And this lets you track it.
Yeah. Ramps are the tough one, right? Because you're looking for the Goldilocks answer. You're looking for not too hot, not too cold, right?
Yeah.
Because on either side, you suffer as a company. And then what is often overlooked with ramps, we focus a lot of time on how long does it take somebody to ramp. First of all, I challenge you on what does it even mean to be ramped? How do you define that? Right? Do you just define it as a function of time and you've deployed quota according to a spreadsheet? Or do you focus on actual productivity? Like, I don't know. Like, that's variable. And the second thing I would say is, while we focus a lot of time on the ramp time, we don't talk about ramp shape a lot. Like, is it a curve? Is it linear? Is it step up? Like, what does it actually look like? And these things, if you're hiring a lot, or you just have a volatile business overall, you're moving people around a lot, it's huge swings in your ability to cover a target.
That's a very good point. I never thought about a shape. So yes, I probably would want to talk more about that at some point. But answering your question, how I define this based on the pipeline coverage. So it's to your point, it's not a time, right? And I think that's what is also misunderstood very often, is that there's some average time that everyone should take to learn. Well, no. I think that all of that is narrowed down to how much pipeline you can generate. That's what really matters to me. And if I don't have certain coverage, multiple of coverage of the target, I don't think that this person is ramped. So that, to your point, someone might not be ever ramped. And that's where you're losing money. That's where you're pissing away money, essentially. And you have to make some decisions. But that also applies for hiring decision. I don't hire more people if my coverage on the existing reps it's just too low. Why would I? So yeah, I mean, I think it's a tough thing, to your point about a balance between the art and math. It's almost like a comp. You know, yeah. How you define the quota, right? Like it's a similar thing. It's just you have to have a nice dance, right?
Well, how fast times have changed though, right? Because you say, and I talk to sales leaders all the time now, but it said exactly what you just said. If I don't have enough coverage, I'm not hiring more people. That is not what companies were doing 3 or 4 years ago, right?
No.
Like, not at all. 40 or 50% sales attainment, who cares?
Throw salespeople at it.
Exactly. If I get incremental advancements and that continues this insane growth path, screw efficiency, then I'm fine with it.
Yeah.
And it's changed so much in a short period of time.
Well, just pragmatic approach to the cash flow management. That's what it is in the end, right? If you press them, they're gonna squeeze.
I'd love to hear Demetrius continue to nerd out on ramp periods. But I am curious to hear a little bit more about what your customers look like or who's a good fit for the tool. It sounds like growth companies are often using it. I'm guessing mostly SaaS-style companies, but what are you seeing?
Yeah, it's mostly SaaS-style companies, recurring revenue companies is how we've sort of optimized the tool. We typically now work with growth stage companies because they're going through... There's key characteristics that really make them a good fit. One is they are always in the midst of raising more. And so they're undergoing more and more scrutiny on, like, what does your planning process really look like? And tell me about not just a year out, but 2 years out. Like, how do you envision the business? And we are a perfect tool to drop in and help with that kind of modeling. But the other thing is, like, if you look at this new wave of companies coming up and going back to what Demetrius just was talking about with just efficiency mindset, they don't want to hire and go to market a ton of non-quota carriers, right? Like, so this notion of building up RevOps teams of 10, 15, 20, it's not going to carry forward. And I know RevOps is growing. I'm a big fan of the professional role, and we work with a lot of them. But like this notion of having these very large teams that are in the support apparatus, you know, it's going to be hard in today's world to justify that. And so it's a matter of like, will we have those people? Absolutely. But can we help them be more productive on a person-by-person basis? That's where we kind of shine.
I think that's kind of the whole notion of us doing this podcast is like there needs to be tools that make all the go-to-market teams more efficient. And we're also seeing that influx of agencies that are focused on RevOps coming out because you might need someone to set up your systems, but it doesn't mean you need them forever or full time. And so how are tools and agencies kind of filling that gap is interesting.
There's another trend here. I want to ask Dustin if he has an opinion about that. But do you think that at the same time when these teams are becoming more lean and there's less of the overhead and to support them, you think that the sales leadership is changing their habits as well?
The good ones.
Yeah. Either becoming managers, not as sellers.
What I'm seeing, and I don't know if this is just a byproduct of who we typically work with and talk to, but I've seen others comment on it, so I'm going to guess not. I am seeing the rise of sales leaders, of CROs that are very data-driven, that are very like operationally minded themselves. Maybe they're not the archetype of like, hey, I'm going to get in there and swing a deal one way or the other, but they're focused more on the structural aspects of how do I create this efficient, this factory? You know, like I'm sure we all know winning by design, love the work that Jocko and team are doing, but like this factory mindset, this is the difference. It's like I lived through the downturn of COVID and a big fast rocket ship SaaS company and saw like the pullback from go to market and saw this desire to retrofit lean aspects on top of a pretty large go-to-market org. What I'm seeing now is just this awareness from the beginning that it's not that you have to turn a profit from the beginning. That's not what I'm saying. But you need to have that mindset from the beginning of, if I look 12, 18 months out, what does this org look like? And how do I think about scaling it? And how do I do that in a way that's not just linear in terms of the cash need? That's the big change that I see.
Yeah, as we were talking through this, I come from more of an operational background, partnerships and product strategy, right? And have led a sales team. But if I was going in as a sales leader, CRO, my first thing would be like, you're walking into whatever comp model, whatever plan that has been set out, whatever tools and operational flows have been set out. And it's like, how do I come in and set up a system that works well? And I think your tool is one that would do that really well to be like, what could we actually do here based on everything that's just been handed to me? And then what other tools do I need to make sure we're efficient and kind of build out that factory? And I think that more and more is going to be what CROs are expected to do when they enter an organization.
Yeah, I think you have to be more mindful. I think you have to be more aware. And you have to realize that every single target you have to operationalize. And if you have a disconnect, you're not set for success.
I feel this way in some cases myself, but in many ways we overhype AI, and in many ways we under, or just don't think about it quite the right way, right? Like AI to blast out more emails and to, like, I don't care about that. AI to challenge the way that we've like fundamentally thought about running go-to-market, that's a different concept because there's a lot of constraints that we put on ourselves in go-to-market that I think AI sort of obliterate. Like, why do we have a weekly forecast meeting? I don't know. Like, shouldn't that be an ongoing thing that it's always up to date and, you know, it's a lot more accurate than what we're going to get rolled up by sales? Sure. That I get, right? Like, why do we have QBRs? I have no idea. Like, we always should have an eye on how we're improving and how we're thinking about next quarter and what we're doing structurally versus what we're doing tactically. That's where I think AI helps, is challenge the way that we've run things, not like do things that we've always done in massively more volume, frankly.
We couldn't agree more. I think that generative AI has its uses in like product-led growth companies. I mean, you don't necessarily need to be throwing salespeople at a SMB or cheaper offering. And you can make that process more efficient. And that's always been how it's been sold. But for a high value product, you're not going to replace what a salesperson can do or an account manager can do with generative AI at this point. I could be proven wrong. What AI is really good at is looking at a shit ton of data and giving you answers out of it. And so the more and more we can leverage that or automate some of the processes that have been manual in the past outside of talking to a human, I think that's where we're seeing those AI companies do really well.
Yeah, I think it's a very good point that you both are making. And I tried to connect this with the demo and how Dustin was showing us the conversation with the assistant. I have a lot of questions about how this is set up, but let's not go there because I can do this for another hour. I think there's another function of what you just said, Dustin, about it underestimating the possibilities that is in the realm of AI optimization. It's actually coaching. So to your point about a weekly forecast, I agree. I probably don't need that. Or at least I don't need this every week. But the primary purpose of that when I set it up is just to grill people about the numbers. More often than not, they just simply don't understand how they are connected, right? If somebody comes to me in a podcast and tells me, look, with 2 weeks to go, I still can close X amount of pipeline, and that never happened before, and I have it in my numbers, and I can calculate this with a lot of precision in Excel, I mean, are you bullshitting me, man? Like, this is not going to happen. That number is wrong. So I'm assuming you're doing this intentionally because it's, for me, it's a simple math. But for these people, might not be. And a lot of people just maybe assume that they know, but they don't. So if they use this conversation with AI, there's an element of educating them, hey, look, your boss will tell you, you suck on this, right? So you better correct this because nobody will buy it.
Yeah.
Your AI should be politer than Demetrius's was, but
don't use my language for any of coaching. But there's a method in this madness.
I totally agree on this notion of AI assist. It's kind of how I think about it. It's how I think about it for even our users that have RevOps teams that use RevCast. It's like AI assist. I can make you better, faster, and more accurate, right? Like if you use RevCast, I assure you when it comes to planning and expectations around capacity and attainment and assumptions over time, I will make you more accurate. I will make you a better business.
Yeah.
I think the same thing true for the rep too. If you bring it down to the individual rep level, I think the challenge that you have there is like, hell, a rep is an eternal optimist, at least the ones that I want to hire, right? They're always going to tell you, hey, Demetri, I got it. Don't worry. Like, I know I've never done it before, but like being able to give them some insight on, hey, this hasn't happened before in your book of business, but if you're going to do it, this is what you need to focus on. And going deeper and saying like, this is where you need to focus your time, forget the rest. I think that's an opportunity for us in go-to-market to get a lot smarter because, you know, reps are inundated. Like they've got a ton of stuff going on. How can we help them focus those skills that they've honed towards the best possible yield? Like every revenue leader is thinking about that, right?
Yeah, and, yeah. I agree. They should. They definitely should. It's just that optimism has to be verified. I think that's what you're referring to, yeah. Right? Like there's an element of contingency planning behind that number.
And guide it.
Exactly, right? Exactly. So somebody tells
you.
You
want to be happy. Like let's go this way, not that way.
Yeah, let's make you happy.
Yeah.
That's how it should be called, this AI assistant. Let me make you happy. So talking about a product, what is the next thing for you? Like, how are you thinking about the next stage of this product, the next stage of the company?
Yeah, I mean, for us, it is increasingly AI forward, but let me be more specific. How am I that little angel sitting on the revenue leader's shoulder that's giving advice that is there to truly converse with, that lets you, one, interrogate your system and your data in a way that you can't today? I'm not talking about BI where you have static reports and you have, like, if you want a new report or answer a new question, you got to go to a team and get it set. No. Like, as I'm thinking about it in my head and the way that I think and talk, I'm going to ask you and I'm going to get an answer. Great. That's where we are now. Going deeper, I want to help revenue leaders understand why, because as you both know, a lot of those questions that they have are performance related. And the second question is, well, why is that the case? Whether it's good or bad, like, why are we at that stage or level or whatever it is? And then the third is, well, what should you do about it? Right? Like, you've got a finite amount of money and time to focus on the issue or to seize this opportunity. What should you do? So we're kind of marching down that with our AI and this kind of this natural assistant. And the other part of it is, And I think this is huge, frankly. I think it's huge for any product now. I want you in my product every day, but that's my best case wish. I really want to meet you where you are. So everything that we just saw that I showed you guys earlier in RevCast, we're actually next week going to have in Slack. And over time, going to have in Teams. And over time, going to have in text. It will be like pervasive. We want you to be able to access this and have this assistant wherever you are, however you want to access it. And there's no reason not to make that available, right? Like our value proposition is rooted on our understanding of the data, our understanding of the problem domain, and our ability to guide you, not where you get that from.
Yeah, that's like been such a change. Various companies I've worked at, we want you in our product every day. And it's like, don't you just want to be the most impactful product? And so what does that mean? And how are you meeting your customers where they're consuming information? There's so many new go-to-market tools coming out. The expectation cannot be that the salesperson logs into every one of them. It's that they're getting the most benefit from them. You talked a little bit about the partnerships you're looking at in terms of how you push that data to where they're at. Obviously, you're integrated with CRMs to pull in the data. I'm curious if you're thinking about tech partnerships that go into pulling new data into the platform, whether that's a product analytics tool or some marketing tools or just other places where Gong, other sales tools that you're going to start to utilize within your AI predictions.
Yeah, I have a strong heart for product analytics tools. I don't think we're there yet. We do a lot of capacity modeling, a lot of capacity management and measurement. We do pipeline management. So what would it mean to get a little deeper on the pipeline side? And that doesn't mean deal level forecasting necessarily, but like, how do we partner with folks that do deeper, more robust pipeline management? That's interesting because fundamentally what I'm thinking about as a sales leader is how do I best align the people I have to the demand?
Yeah.
Right. Like that is the question that you're trying to answer. So that's really interesting for us. I think the other area that's sort of interesting is you have people, and then you have territories, and you have accounts. And these things are so interconnected. So like, how do we think about that, maybe through partnership or otherwise, will be important for us going forward. And then, you know, kind of bringing on the other side of it is, well, a lot of these people that we know about are selling things against a quota, and they get paid against a quota. So they have commission plans. How do commission plans and management come into the system? You know, fundamentally, if I look at the market of rep tech, and this is crude, but I'll divide it crudely, there's a lot of tech that runs deals and runs the quarter. That's 90% of the tech out there. There's very little tech that runs the business. And I think there's a huge opportunity for platforms to come in that run the revenue business and that connect a lot of these. You know, you mentioned being in the ops background. These things are connected, like commissions and capacity and territory and account. And like, these are all connected things. They're very interrelated. So how do we make it easier for the people that have to be in charge of that to put it all together, to model different scenarios, to react quickly to what's happening in the market? That's where I see the big opportunity.
Totally agree. And I think those are all interesting partnership directions.
Just a quick question about the AI positioning in general on the market. You've heard about AI, right, Lizzie? So, I mean, this is like every other word right now on LinkedIn is AI. Just a quick question about that. I see the two major trends here. So the first one is the personalization. So the AI is going to be used widely to personalize, take a lot of data, just personalize to the specifics. I think you mentioned a little bit about that. It's like you mentioned being predictive and prescriptive, but personalization is a big part of it, I'm assuming. And then the second dimension is, as you also alluded to that, is making the information available. Right. So I almost see this as a function of UI UX. Right. So there's something that is in the UI UX that, you know, ChatGPT can give you, but everyone else will work to almost perfection to make it so adaptable and easy to see that it's going to be obvious to you. Right. It's going to be like a golden standard.
Yeah.
Is that what you see as well, or you see some other trends around that?
Look, I think about AI and the way that we use it today, if we're being honest, I get a lot of productivity out of it now, personally. But to do it, I go to the AI tool in question and deliberately use it. If we, as a system, understand our domain very well, we have the same prompts in our system. Why can't I run those prompts for you and say, hey, Demetrius, hey, Lizzie, like, you need to be focused here.
And this is what you should do. Without me asking. Yes.
Yeah. I don't need you to go ask. If we understand our domain well enough and we understand your data well enough and we've done a good enough job of mapping your data and our data model together, well, I should be able to use AI to bring things to you. If I'm going to make it a true revenue assistant, right? Like, you know, or a good revenue chief of staff or a good head of RevOp, like AI driven, you want that person coming to you with suggestions, right? And like, that's where I think, not just us, but I think in general, I think AI is heading there for sure, because otherwise, if it's just a tool that we always have to go to, like, what is the ultimate productivity gain? We just get incrementally faster at doing things we already do. I don't think that's the end game.
That's a really good analogy. I'm thinking about the ops person, right? Because I'm going to go to them sometimes and say, hey, I need historical trends, blah, blah. But then other times, a really good ops person comes to me and says, hey, I've been noticing this trend and I actually think we need to do this. And so how do you create AI agents and assistants that are doing just that, acting closer to a human that can give you information as well? We've chatted a bunch about the tools coming out to help with the business of revenue and other AI tools. I'd love to hear if there's anyone that you want to give kudos to that you think are doing really cool things in the space right now.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a lot out there. From a non-tool perspective, I mentioned it earlier, but I like what the Winning by Design team is doing. I like the codification, and a lot of it is, if you've lived through Stash, you'll be like, oh yeah, that's right. Oh yeah, that's right. But pulling it all together and giving you frameworks to navigate it, big fan. I like what some of the newer style commission management systems are doing, like QuotaPath. I have good friends over there. Like, this notion of first defining the objectives and initiatives of a company and backing that into compensation plans, when you hear it, it's obvious. But frankly, if you've been in the business, it's novel. That's not the way it works, right? Mm-hmm. Like, it's so good. And I don't know if, I'm sure you've heard of Nooks AI.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I have it.
Yeah, they're doing some interesting things. I think some meaningful things around the AI SDR space. Like, there's a lot of noise in that space, and I've seen a lot of solutions there, and I don't think many do much. But Nooks is doing some really cool stuff that is not trying to replace an SDR, which I really love. They're very clear. Like, hey, we're not saying you don't need SDRs. We're saying you probably need a smaller team, and we're going to make them 10x more impactful. That's where AI is going, right? Like, and I like to see people leaning into that and backing it up with what they do with tech.
Yeah, we have QuotaPath coming on next week. So great setup. Yes. And we'll have to get Nooks on as well. You've given us all a ton of great tips throughout this. It will be great to listen to and hear your perspective just on running a sales business and what it looks like. I'd love to hear your top tips that you have for whatever topic you picked.
I think top tips for being a revenue leader, growth stage company. One, do not underestimate the importance of communication, like consistent communication with your CEO, with your stakeholders. Look, it's important to hit a number. Don't get me wrong, but you're being judged far beyond just hitting a number. You're being judged by how you can scale the business, how you're thinking about like the first principles of the business and what that means for it going forward. The second thing that I would say to the growth stage leaders is, if you like have real intention with how you hire non-quota carriers, like be really thoughtful about that. Don't just follow trends. You certainly don't need a chief of staff, by the way, if you're like a new go-to-market leader. And you may be able to contract certain things out, even like ops, to get started, where, you know, and there's a little bit of a trend of like, go hire a strategic RevOps person. Well, probably your business is too early for that. And for that person, and that person is probably going to flounder. in that sort of a setup for the most part. And the third thing I would say is, this is getting into the uncomfortable zone, but you've got to be comfortable with conflict. And I would say this especially to the heads of sales that are hired as the first heads of sales. And there's that transition going from founder-led sales to sales leader. Now, you have to be comfortable with conflict. You have to be comfortable pushing back on that founder, CEO, whatever they are, and saying that, like, yeah, I understand that that's what got us here, but to get to where we need to go, this is what it needs to look like. And it, look, don't get me wrong, it needs to be well-reasoned. Founders should never step back from sales totally. I'm not suggesting that. Like, I was a very large company where the founder was our best seller, like, forever. Like, you've got to have confidence, right? You've got to take the bull by its horn. You got to show that you can lead the org and you have a vision for it. And so, you know, that's what I would pass along.
Yeah, you can't just be a yes man or woman. So, mm-mm. I love it.
No, you can't. You can't. I mean, these are all great things that you said, Dustin. I love that.
Well, so that's a wrap on the episode. Thank you so much for joining us. I was really excited to see the tool, and it delivered. So appreciate you coming on.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you.